cultures. They encourage far-ranging exploration. Stability in nature is often based on tension between opposing forces. Quick-moving hares and slow-moving tortoises. Introverts and extroverts. Men and women. Thinking and feeling. Human beings are built to be adaptive. We are hardwired never to be completely balanced or satisfied, and this keeps us physiologically limber and desiring change. We have the capacity to conform to many diverse surroundings. The human body's stability is based on the principle of adapting while remaining steady. The body has opposing regulatory mechanisms that maintain a fluid balance. Like teeter-totters, all body systems have an excite, or turn-up, side, and an inhibit, or turn-down, side. Various set points in the body signal if something is out of whack. The signals travel through interconnected feedback loops, turning systems up or down until the body is back in a fluctuating homeostasis. Since the beginning of humankind, people have attempted to explain the obvious differences among people, and often these differences were looked at through the lens of balance. Beginning in the 4th and 5th centuries BC, the theory of humors was all the rage. For a balanced temperament, it was thought the body needed equal amounts of four humors: yellow bile, black bile, blood, and phlegm. In China, the balance was based upon the five forces of energy called qi: wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. Over the centuries, many different categorizing schemes came in and out of fashion. The concept of innate temperament was forced underground for decades after the Nazis abused the concept by employing racial stereotypes as a pretext to murder Jewish people, gypsies, homosexuals, and members of other groups. Only recently, with the technological advances in psychobiology, twin research, animal research, and studies of brain-injured patients, has the notion of temperament been resurrected. It has long been recognized that we all have a natural temperament climate in which we feel more comfortable, perform our best, and maintain a crucial balance for our species. What is new is that we are beginning to understand how temperament is a function of underlying brain mechanisms. The recipe for you. Nature is often hidden, sometimes overcome, seldom extinguished. Sir Francis Bacon. Where does our temperament come from? It begins with genes. We are shaped by our genes. Our genes are inherited chemical recipes that determine the makeup of each person. The cells, tissues, organs, and systems that create the intricate networks of our body and mind. All human beings have 99.9% of the same genetic prescription. Our individual differences come from the 0.1% of our genetic material that is just us. The genes of chimps and humans are 98% the same. It doesn't take much genetic material to make us quite different. How do genes affect our temperament? Temperamental differences appear to be derived primarily from our neurochemistry. Our genetic inheritance includes a private reserve of about 150 different brain chemicals and recipes to formulate our neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters guide messages from cell to cell, directing all brain functions. At present, about 60 neurotransmitters have been identified. The main ones are dopamine, serotonin, noradrenaline, acetylcholine, and endorphins. These neurotransmitters have certain pathways in the brain. As they travel along the pathway, they direct where the blood circulates and regulate how much of it flows to various brain centers. The route and quantity of blood flow influences what parts of the brain and central nervous centers are turned on. Our response to the world and how we behave depends on what parts of the systems are activated. In your genes. Let's trace the effect of one gene, D4DR, that influences temperament. Keep in mind that no one gene causes a specific temperament. However, D4DR, or the novelty-seeking gene, has been studied extensively, and the results are quite startling. It is housed on chromosome 11, which Matt Ridley, in his book Genome, the Autobiography of a Species in 23 Chapters, named the personality chromosome because of its influence on behavior. Studies of this gene began to unravel the differences in temperament between routine-loving Queen Victoria and thrill-seeking Lawrence of Arabia. The D4DR gene affects the neurotransmitter dopamine, which controls excitement levels and is vital for physical activity and motivation. Dean Hamer, chief of gene structure and regulation at the National Cancer Institute in Bethesda, Maryland, studied the D4DR gene by testing families of people who like to bungee jump, skydive, and ice climb. Seeking experience for the sake of doing something new is their passion. They like far-out music, exotic travel, and anything novel. They can't stand repetitive experiences, routine work, and boring people. They can be impulsive and temperamental, and they may fall into addictions and risk burning out early in life. They are fast talkers and persuaders. They are willing to take risks to gain rewards. Their strengths are living life to the fullest and pushing the limits to new heights. The novelty seekers were found to have a long D4DR gene and were less sensitive to the neurotransmitter dopamine. Therefore, they need to experience life's thrills and chills in order to produce higher levels of dopamine. Hamer then studied people whom he identified as low novelty seekers. He concluded that their D4DR genes were short and that they are highly sensitive to dopamine. Because they receive enough dopamine in quiet activities, they don't need as much buzz in their lives. They also receive a different kind of good feeling from another neurotransmitter that I will discuss later. Low novelty seekers tend to be reflective individuals who are perfectly content to live at a slower pace. They feel more discomfort than enjoyment from thrill-seeking or risk-taking. Orderly and cautious, they enjoy the comfort of routine and the familiar. Thus, they don't incur much risk. Low novelty seekers like to see the big picture before plunging ahead, and they focus well on long-term projects. They are even-tempered, good listeners, and loyal. As Hamer says in Living with Our Genes, high and low novelty seekers don't differ in their desire to feel good. Everyone likes to feel good. But they differ in what makes them feel good. High scorers need excitement for the brain to feel good. The same level of arousal makes a low scorer feel anxious. A steady, predictable situation would bore a high scorer, but comfort a low scorer. Don't these low and high novelty seekers sound a lot like introverts and extroverts? Although not described by researchers in those terms, I think they come pretty close to characterizing the two extremes of the temperament continuum. Dopamine appears to play an important part in what brain pathways introverts and extroverts use, and how those circuits affect their temperament and behavior. An internal life. Imagine having an active mind trapped inside a body that is entirely paralyzed, except for the ability to move your eyes sideways and blink your eyelids. A few people are living in this nightmare, called locked-in syndrome. A mere millimeter makes the difference between ending up in a coma, unconscious, or in locked-in syndrome, conscious. Both are caused by trauma to the brainstem, located at the base of the neck, and involved in regulating basic body functions. If the trauma is to the front of the brainstem, the motor pathways are destroyed, but the patients are alert. Since the nerves for blinking and eye movement are at the back of the brainstem, they can still move their eyes. This tragic condition has given us an intriguing clue about the connection between acetylcholine and the enjoyment introverts gain from introspection. Although it seems as if people with locked-in syndrome should feel claustrophobic and terrified, researchers were shocked to find they don't. Although sad about their situation, these patients report a sense of tranquility and lack of terror about their loss of physical freedom. In these patients, acetylcholine is blocked to the muscles, but not to brain pathways, so their capacity to feel good about living in their internal world, the enjoyment from thinking and feeling, remains intact. Word retrieval. Often, introverts have trouble finding the word they want when they are speaking out loud. Our brains use many different areas for speaking, reading, and writing. Therefore, information needs to flow freely between the separate areas. Word retrieval may be a problem for introverts because the information moves slowly. One cause of this is that we use long-term memory, so it takes longer and requires the right association, something that reminds us of the word, to reach back into our long-term memory to locate the exact word we want. If we are anxious, it may be even more difficult to find and articulate a word. Written words use different pathways in the brain, which seems to flow fluently for many introverts. Tracking brain tributaries. Turtle buries its thoughts, like its eggs, in the sand, and allows the sea to hatch the little ones. Native American saying. Brain research has uncovered that the brain has separate pathways for different neurotransmitters. Many studies have traced the brain pathways associated with the personality dimension of introversion and extroversion. However, until we could actually visually image the amount and location of blood flow in the brain, we were still in the educated guess arena. Dr. Deborah Johnson reported in the American Journal of Psychiatry the first attempt to replicate, using positron emission tomography, or PET, earlier brain function studies of introverts and extroverts. Dr. Johnson asked a group of introverts and a group of extroverts, who were determined by responses to questionnaires, to lie down and relax. Tiny doses of radioactivity were injected into their bloodstream. Then they were scanned to determine the most active part of the brain. On the scan, red, blue, and other bright colors revealed where and how much blood flowed in the brain. The researcher discovered two findings that replicated what less sophisticated experiments had already suggested. First, introverts had more blood flow to their brains than extroverts. More blood flow indicates more internal stimulation. Anytime blood flows to an area of your body, like when you cut your finger, that area becomes more sensitive. Second, the introverts' and extroverts' blood traveled along different pathways. Dr. Johnson found the introverts' pathway is more complicated and focused internally. The introverts' blood flowed to the parts of the brain involved with internal experiences like remembering, solving problems, and planning. This pathway is long and complex. The introverts were attending to their internal thoughts and feelings. Dr. Johnson tracked the fast-acting brain pathway of extroverts, showing how they process input that influences their activity and motivation. The extroverts' blood flowed to the areas of the brain where visual, auditory, touch, and taste, excluding smell, sensory processing occurs. Their main pathway is short and less complicated. The extroverts attended externally to what was happening in the lab. They were soaking in sensory input. This study validated a key concept in the introvert-extrovert temperament puzzle. Dr. Johnson concluded that the behavioral differences between introverts and extroverts result from using different brain pathways that influence where we direct our focus, internally or externally. As an extrovert, Dana is exuberant at a roaring football game, drinking in the sights and sounds. She is excited and uses her short-term memory to chat with her partner, Nathan, about the game during halftime, recounting all the plays. She feels energized and up as she leaves the stadium. Peter, an introvert, is going to a museum, looking forward to seeing his favorite Monet. As he enters the museum, which is not crowded, he feels overwhelmed. He reduces his focus immediately, perhaps without even realizing it. Straight away, he heads for the room where the Monet hangs. He thinks about the Monet and his response to it, reaching back into his long-term memory, comparing the current experience with the last time he saw the painting. He imagines future visits and connects the gentle feelings of wistfulness and a tingle of excitement with the experience. Inside his head, Peter talks to himself about the subtle pastels in the painting. He leaves the museum feeling good. By learning the exact circuits of the brain that are activated by introverts and extroverts, we shed light on some of the reasons we behave the way we do. But the most valuable clue is yet to come. Tracking neurotransmitter paw prints. Not only does introverts and extroverts' blood travel on separate pathways, each pathway requires a different neurotransmitter. As we recall, Dean Hamer found that novelty seekers, based on their genes, need to pursue thrills to meet their greater demand for dopamine. I said they sounded a lot like extreme extroverts. And, as it turns out, the pathway extroverts use is activated by dopamine. Dopamine is a powerful neurotransmitter most closely identified with movement, attention, alert states, and learning. In Mapping the Mind, Rita Carter states, "Too much dopamine seems to cause hallucinations and paranoia. Too little dopamine is known to cause tremor and the inability to start voluntary movement, and is implicated in feelings of meaninglessness, lethargy, and misery. Low dopamine also results in lack of attention and concentration, cravings, and withdrawal." Having the right amount of dopamine for your body is critical. And it has another important job. In States of Mind, Stephen Hyman says, "One way of characterizing the job of this dopamine circuit is that it's a reward system. It says, in effect, that was good, let's do that again. And let's remember exactly how we did it." That is why cocaine and amphetamines are so addictive. They increase dopamine. Since extroverts have a low sensitivity to dopamine and yet require large amounts of it, how do they get enough? Parts of the brain release some dopamine, but extroverts need its sidekick, adrenaline, which is released from the action of the sympathetic nervous system to make more dopamine in the brain. So the more active the extrovert is, the more HAP hits are fired and dopamine is increased. Extroverts feel good when they have places to go and people to see. Introverts, on the other hand, are highly sensitive to dopamine. Too much dopamine and they feel overstimulated. Introverts use an entirely different neurotransmitter, acetylcholine, on their more dominant pathway. In Wet Mind, Stephen Coslin and Oliver Koenig cite the brain pathway for acetylcholine, and guess what? It is the same pathway Dr. Johnson imaged for introverts. Acetylcholine is another important neurotransmitter connected to many vital functions in the brain and body. It affects attention and learning, especially perceptual learning, influences the ability to sustain a calm, alert feeling, and to utilize long-term memory, and activates voluntary movement. It stimulates a good feeling when thinking and feeling. Much of the present research into acetylcholine strengthens our understanding of the introvert's brain and body. Acetylcholine was the first neurotransmitter identified, but as other neurotransmitters were detected, research focused on the newer ones. Recently, however, a connection was made between a deficiency of acetylcholine and Alzheimer's disease. This finding has prompted more research into acetylcholine and its connection with memory storage and dream processes. It seems that acetylcholine plays a large part in our sleep and dream states. We dream when we are in rapid eye movement, or REM, sleep. Acetylcholine switches on REM sleep, initiating dreaming, and then paralyzes us, disengages voluntary movement, so that we dream without acting out what we are dreaming. Researchers are finding that we need sleep to encode our memories, advancing them from short-term memories into long-term memories during REM sleep. As Ronald Kodalak says in his book, Inside the Brain, acetylcholine is the oil that makes the memory machine function. When it dries up, the machine freezes. One other interesting tidbit is that estrogen prevents a decline in acetylcholine. This is one of the reasons why during menopause, as their estrogen levels decline, women experience memory loss. So introverts require a limited range of not too much or too little dopamine and a good level of acetylcholine to leave them feeling calm and without depression or anxiety. It's a skimpy comfort zone. Discovering what neurotransmitters introverts and extroverts use is pivotal, because when neurotransmitters are released in the brain, they also engage the autonomic nervous system. This is the system that connects the mind and body and greatly influences our decisions about how we behave and react to our world. I think the link between which neurotransmitters travel what pathways and how they connect with different parts of the autonomic nervous center is the master key to unlocking the temperament puzzle. Whereas extroverts are linked with the dopamine, adrenaline, energy-spending, sympathetic nervous system, introverts are connected with the acetylcholine, energy-conserving, parasympathetic nervous system. The longer introvert acetylcholine pathway. Incoming stimulation from the spinal cord enters the reticular activating system, where alertness is regulated. This is decreased in introverts. The next stop is the hypothalamus, which regulates thirst, temperature, and appetite. It turns on the throttle-down system in introverts. It proceeds to the anterior thalamus, the relay station that sends stimuli to the frontal lobe and turns stimuli down in introverts. It next enters Broca's area, the speech area where inner monologue is activated. On to the frontal lobe, where thinking, planning, learning, and reasoning are engaged. It then proceeds to the hippocampus, which is attuned to the environment and relays to the long-term memory. Then finally to the amygdala, the emotional center, where feelings are attached to thoughts in introverts. The shorter extrovert dopamine pathway. Incoming stimulation from the spinal cord enters the reticular activating system, where alertness is regulated. This is increased in extroverts. The next stop is the hypothalamus, which regulates thirst, temperature, and appetite. This turns on the full throttle system in extroverts. It moves on to the posterior thalamus, the relay station, which sends increased stimuli to the amygdala. It then proceeds directly to the amygdala, the emotional center, where emotions are attached to actions in the motor area in extroverts. Finally, it moves on to the temporal and motor area, where movement connects to the working or short-term memory. This is also the center for learning and processing sensory and emotional stimuli. The nicotine connection. A clue to the mystery about why introverts and extroverts feel different in contemplation and activity is derived from an odd source, research into why folks are addicted to smoking. In studies, smokers report they smoke because they feel as if they concentrate better, learn easier, remember better, and possess a perked-up feeling. Nicotine receptors in the brain mimic the action of acetylcholine. Pathways using acetylcholine, which increases attention, memory, and a sense of well-being, dominate introverts. Nicotine also causes the body to release dopamine, and it influences the breakdown of serotonin and norepinephrine, all neurotransmitters that are activated in extroverts when they are active. Cigarettes trigger a sense of well-being from both sides of the introverted and extroverted continuum, so no wonder so many people smoke, even when they know the dangers. The keys to unlocking your long-term memory. Human memory is complex and uses many different areas of the brain. The brain stores memories in numerous locations and creates links between them called associations. Often, we introverts think nothing relevant is in our head because we haven't triggered the association to our long-term memory. Our mind seems blank. This is why introverts can even forget what we like to do or what we are good at. We need to locate a connecting handle to yank an experience out of our memory. Here's the neat thing. Most pieces of information in long-term memory were stored with several handles or keys, associations, for unlocking them. If we find just one key, we can retrieve the whole memory. So, let's say you like to paint, or fish, or walk around a park with flowers in bloom, but that information is locked in long-term memory. You have some free time, but you can't remember what you like to do. This may sound nuts to an extrovert, but it is a common problem of introverts. Remember, it takes only one key, like a thought, emotion, or sensory association, to open the whole memory. Sit down, relax, and let your mind wander and associate to possible sensory keys, like smells, visual pictures, sounds, the feel of your body, or the taste of something pleasant. Or think of an emotional key, like how you felt the last time that you did something fun. Let your mind go anywhere it wants. Jumping from association to association is okay. Maybe the peaceful feeling of sitting in a park on a sunny day returns to you, and with it the thought, I like Oak Park. I enjoyed going there. Now you could go to the park, or relax and look for another memory. Write down the memories you find to use another day when you can't remember what you enjoy. Use these keys to unlock your memory to search for what you are good at, too. Full throttling ahead or throttling down. Life begets energy. Energy creates energy. It is only by spending oneself wisely that one becomes rich in life. Eleanor Roosevelt. The hypothalamus, located at the base of the brain and only the size of a pea, regulates body temperature, emotions, hunger, thirst, and the autonomic nervous system. This system was named autonomic from a Greek word meaning self-governing. There are two branches of the autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. These act in opposition to each other, like the gas pedal and the brake in an automobile. They control involuntary, unconscious functions such as heart rate, respiration, and blood vessel regulation, and are the most directly involved in maintaining our fluid homeostasis. They function in a feedback circle, sending messages back to the brain through the neurotransmitters that they release, regulating energy, mood, and health. When mobility is required, the sympathetic system, often called the fight, fright, or flight system, leaps into action. I call it the full throttle system. It is activated by the excitatory neurotransmitter dopamine in the brain. When withdrawal is required, the parasympathetic system, which I am calling the throttle-down system, relaxes the body and calms us down. It is activated by the inhibitory neurotransmitter acetylcholine in the brain. It is my belief that these two powerful primary systems, the full throttle or sympathetic, and the throttle down or parasympathetic, are the basic foundations of introverted and extroverted temperaments. In his book, Affect Regulation and the Origin of the Self, Dr. Alan Shore states that each person has a rest point between the two sides of these systems. The rest point is where we gain the most energy and feel the best. Throughout our lives, we will fluctuate around our rest points. In a personal conversation with Dr. Shore, he stated that temperament is key. If we know our rest point, then we can adjust our energy to achieve our goals. Supporting my conclusion, researchers David Lester and Diane Barry selected introverts and extroverts on the basis of questionnaires and then tested their physiological responses such as high or low blood pressure, physical activity level, moist or dry mouth, and frequency of hunger pangs. They reported in the journal Perceptual and Motor Skills that they found the parasympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system to be dominant in introverts. The full throttle system. Let's say you are walking around the block at about 9 p.m., and suddenly, out of the blue, a large coyote circles you, his head low, his eyes sizing you up for a tasty evening snack. Your body accelerates into the full throttle system. Your pupils dilate to let in more light. Your heart pumps faster against your chest, and your blood pressure elevates to give your organs and muscles extra oxygen. Your blood vessels constrict to reduce bleeding in case you are wounded. Your brain is signaled to go on hyper-focused alert. Your blood sugar and free fatty acids are elevated to give you more energy. Your digestion, saliva, and elimination processes slow down. This fight, fright, or flight system is activated for emergencies, real or imagined. It is our active external coping system. It prepares us to make snap decisions to fight if needed, or to head for the hills. Thinking is reduced, and the focus is on activity. In this situation, we need this system to wave our arms and yell at the coyote, or, if all else fails, make fast tracks. Our bodies run primarily on this system until we are almost 2 years old. This gives us the energy and the enthusiasm to explore the world, what developmental psychologists call the practicing phase. As adults, the sympathetic nervous system mobilizes us toward new things, food, new frontiers, and companionship, all of which we need for survival. When we are active, inquisitive, or daring, we are using this system. If we are sitting in the stands cheering for our favorite baseball team, this system releases energy by sending feel-good neurotransmitters to our brain. It also releases glycogen and oxygen to our body for energy. As we have seen, extroverts feel more energized by active behaviors. The full throttle system is spending-oriented, and it doesn't restore the body. However, if extroverts don't learn to use the throttle-down system, they can burn out and damage their health. They can develop sleep and digestive problems, heart disease, and deficiencies in their immune system. The throttle-down system doesn't give extroverts the energy or hap hits, which I mentioned in Chapter 2. The full throttle system does. By learning to use the throttle-down system by attending to thoughts, feelings, bodily sensations, and body messages, extroverts can balance their natural external strengths by developing internal capacities. The throttle-down system. Picture yourself strolling down a dusty path in Big Sur. You lean on a rock to watch the tumbling waterfall. Suddenly, you hear a rattle. It sounds very close. You slowly turn your head to spy a coiled diamondback rattlesnake quivering his rattle and staring beady eyes straight at you. Your body turns into petrified wood, and everything slows down. A light bulb flashes on in your brain. What should you do? These are responses to the system responsible for energy conservation and storage, the parasympathetic nervous system. This system signals the body to conserve and withdraw. Your pupils constrict to reduce light. Your heart rate and blood pressure slow to reduce oxygen consumption. Your muscles relax. Digestion, secretions, and elimination increase, which is why it is sometimes called the rest and digest system. Outward focus is reduced, and inward focus is increased. The mind is able to think and reflect. You decide to creep with micro movements away from the rock and the ominous snake. This system becomes more active when children are around 18 months to 2 years old. We learn to calm ourselves down in order to learn potty training and language. When you are lying in a hammock watching the clouds, or just kicking back, this is the system you are engaging. Your body is storing, not spending, energy. Introverts' feel-good neurotransmitters are firing as they relax in pensive contemplation. This system is restorative and prepares us to use the full-throttle system when it is required. The full-throttle system does not give introverts energy or hap hits the way extroverts experience them. To people with introverted physiology, all that dopamine and adrenaline usually feels too stimulating. Occasionally, it can be fun. Introverts who stay in the throttle-down system too much can become depressed, unmotivated, or frustrated about not reaching goals they want to attain. They need to engage the full-throttle side of their system to get up and out. This requires learning to regulate anxiety and overstimulation, which I will be discussing later. The full-throttle and throttle-down systems on the road. Obviously, we need the ability to use the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems at different times. But under stress, our most dominant system is set into motion. For example, years ago, Mike and I were involved in a car accident. We were driving on a narrow, two-lane highway at night, and suddenly something huge flew at our windshield. Mike swerved over the double yellow line. Luckily, the oncoming lane was empty. The massive flying object missed us and hit the station wagon behind us. Mike pulled over to the side of the road and stopped. I didn't move. My body felt numb, and my breathing slowed. I didn't want Mike to get out of the car. In my mind, I could see him getting hit by oncoming traffic. Mike, his heart racing, was thinking only of taking action. He opened his door and leaped out to see if anyone was hurt. I went into my dominant system, the throttle down, to halt and examine, while Mike was catapulted into his dominant system, the full throttle, to bound out and do something. It turned out that a mule had escaped his enclosure and meandered into the road. He had been hit by a pickup truck and crashed into its windshield. Then the ill-fated creature flew over us, because Mike dodged quickly, exhibiting good full-throttle reaction, and hit the hood of the car behind us. My throttle-down reluctance to get out of the car was sensible. It was a pitch-black night on a two-lane highway with cars strewn cattywampus all over the road. It was dangerous. I wanted to assess the situation, a good strategy. Mike's full-throttle response, checking on the injured, was helpful. As it turned out, no humans were badly hurt. We were fortunate. Sadly, the mule wasn't so fortunate. Several of the men dragged the mule's body off the road before any other unsuspecting travelers could hit it. To sum up, although we all need both of these systems for balance, we are genetically and environmentally wired to use one more than the other, especially under stress. I believe the two sides of the autonomic nervous system provide the introvert-extrovert continuum. Although we all engage both sides of the nervous system, our brains and neurotransmitters make one side dominant. The big picture. If we combine the recipes from genetics, messages given by neurotransmitters, brain pathways, and functions of the autonomic nervous centers, what picture emerges? The complete process and feedback loop for each end of the introvert-extrovert continuum. Although I will simplify them, these are the basic components. Of course, we all have both systems, one to focus on the outside world and one to focus on the inside world. However, one will feel more restorative and energizing because of how our brains react to the neurotransmitters. The introverted process. Introverts walk around with lots of thoughts and feelings in their heads. They are mulling, comparing old and new experiences. They often have an ongoing dialogue with themselves. Since this is such a familiar experience, they may not realize that other minds work in different ways. Some introverts aren't even aware that they think so much, or that they need time for ideas and solutions to pop into their heads. They need to reach back into long-term memory to locate information. This requires reflection time without pressure. They also need to give themselves physical space to let their feelings and impressions bubble up. During REM sleep or while dreaming, this pathway integrates daily experiences and stores them in long-term memory where they are filed in many areas of the brain. Introverts are in a constant distilling process that requires lots of energy. Acetylcholine also triggers the hypothalamus to send a message to the parasympathetic nervous system to conserve energy. This system slows the body down, allowing introverts to contemplate and examine the situation. If a decision is made to take action, it will require conscious thought and energy to get the body moving. This explains why many introverts can sit for long periods while they are concentrating. Acetylcholine also rewards concentration by giving HAP hits, but doesn't give the charge of glucose and oxygen, energy, to the body. The introverted process results in behavior affecting all areas of an innie's life. The extroverted process. Extroverts are alert for sensory and emotional input. When they get stimuli, they can answer quickly because the pathway is rapid and responsive. Their short-term memory is on the tip of their tongue. So while the introvert is still waiting for a word, the extrovert has spit out several. Extroverts need more input to keep their feedback loop working. Their system alerts the sympathetic nervous system, which is designed to take action without too much thinking. It releases adrenaline, blood, or oxygen to muscles, and glucose, thus flooding the body with energy. The release of neurotransmitters from various organs enters the feedback loop, sending components back to the brain to make more dopamine. Dopamine and adrenaline release HAP hits from the feel-good center. No wonder extroverts don't want to slow down. For introverts, all that adrenaline and glucose soon leaves them feeling wiped out. It is too stimulating, consumes too much fuel, and leaves them with their fuel tank empty. Since they don't get as many HAP hits from dopamine and adrenaline, and acetylcholine isn't increased in this feedback loop, they don't receive the same good feelings extroverts do from this side of the system. Of two minds. There is a foolish corner in the brain of the wisest man. Aristotle. Nature has made the brain a marriage of two minds. The brain is divided into two halves, the right and left cerebral hemispheres. In some ways, the two hemispheres act as if they are two separate brains. Paradoxically, they also act as a whole unit. The twin hemispheres are bound together by a bridge of fibers, called the corpus callosum, that allow a steady stream of dialogue to pass back and forth. But each hemisphere appears to specialize in certain functions and behaviors. Research has found that some folks use both hemispheres equally, called bilateral dominance. But as with the autonomic nervous system, most people depend on one hemisphere more often than the other. Right-brained and left-brained dominant introverts display different talents, behaviors, and limitations. During the first 2 years of life, we primarily use our symbol-oriented right brains. This is why babies can learn sign language at about 9 or 10 months. Their right brain mind can connect a symbol with a meaning. Waving means bye-bye. Finger on the lips means hungry. There is a great book about teaching babies sign language entitled Baby Signs. The left brain mind becomes active around 18 months to 2 years of age, when language begins to appear. Remember that this is when the throttle down system also begins to function. Our practicing stage is slowed down so we can learn to think and speak. The right brain. Each half of the mature brain has its own strengths and weaknesses, its own style of processing information, and unique skills. Right brain talents bring spontaneous, creative, and boundless gifts to the world. It is sometimes referred to as the unconscious mind. It has little language ability and cannot verbalize its thinking process. Rather, its thinking is formed in a rapid, complex, and spatial manner. Right-brained people can do several tasks at once. They are emotional and can be funny or playful. Right-brained functions are difficult to explain because they are, by nature, nonverbal, abstract, holistic, simultaneous, and unlimited. They resemble an ever-changing, multicolored kaleidoscope in which the tumbling chips of color slide into a variety of patterns. The right brain mind is expressed in body language, actions, free-flowing dancing, and various art forms. It deals with the creative aspects of human life, such as rhythm, daydreaming, images, colors, face recognition, and pattern shaping. If you are more right-brained, you may tend to be playful in solving problems, respond to events with emotion, interpret body language easily, have a good sense of humor, process information subjectively, improvise, use metaphors and analogies when describing something, deal with several problems at once, use hands a lot in conversation, notice patterns and think in pictures, see solutions as approximate and evolving, not realize all that you know. The left brain. The left brain is one of the main reasons we have been a successful species. It helps execute complicated plans. If your left brain mind is dominant, you handle information very differently from right brainers. Left brain folks process one thing at a time, and if they have a series of tasks to do, they like to finish one before starting another. They are often list makers. They rely more on short-term memory, repetition, and verbal skills. You may have guessed that more men than women are left-brained. Left-brained folks tend to be tidy, methodical, and punctual. They value written and verbal information. They tend to think in concrete ways, as if they are processing data. They like to reduce information into logical sections. In decision-making, they are not so influenced by emotions. If they have a sense of humor, it will be more in the witty or sarcastic department. They may appear somewhat controlled, cool, and detached. Left-brained introverts are closer to most people's stereotype of an introvert. They may have fewer social needs and are often focused on a career or hobby. They may use denial or obsessive thinking as a way to protect themselves from anxiety. If you are more left-brained, you may tend to analyze pros and cons before taking action. Be neat and tidy. Base decisions on facts, not on sentimentality. Give concrete examples when describing something. Think in terms of right and wrong, good and bad. Process experiences objectively. Be keenly aware of time. Proceed one step at a time. Not pick up social cues easily. Like to categorize. Be idea-oriented. Be comfortable with words and numbers. Seek exact solutions. Right or left? Introverts do not all think alike. Introverts who are more right-brained process information, use language, and intuit in a way that's quite unlike left-brained introverts. If, as you listen to this book, you find that what I am saying doesn't quite fit you, it may be because the topic is influenced by brain dominance. For example, left-brained introverts may feel more comfortable speaking in public than right-brained introverts. So, if I say introverts have difficulty finding words at times, that experience may not resonate at all with you. As you listen to this section, see if you think you are more right or left brain dominant. Our physiology, ourselves. You can observe a lot just by watching. Yogi Berra. The terms introvert and extrovert have been used to describe people for almost 100 years. Why? In part because being an introvert or extrovert is easy to read in many of our behaviors. And these behaviors stem from our physiology. Let's take a look. Introvert brain-body circuits. As we have heard, the introverted brain has a higher level of internal activity and thinking than the extroverted brain. It is dominated by the long, slow acetylcholine pathway. Acetylcholine also triggers the throttle down, or parasympathetic nervous system, that controls certain body functions and influences how innies behave. The fact that introverts' brains are buzzing means that innies are likely to reduce eye contact when speaking to focus on collecting words and thoughts, increase eye contact when listening to take in information. Surprise others with their wealth of information. Shy away from too much attention or focus. Appear glazed, dazed, or zoned out when stressed, tired, or in groups. The dominance of the long acetylcholine pathway means that introverts may start talking in the middle of a thought, which can confuse others. Have a good memory, but take a long time to retrieve memories. Can forget things they know very well, might stumble around when explaining their job, or temporarily forget a word they want to use. May think they told you something when they have just thought it. Are clearer about ideas, thoughts, and feelings after sleeping on them. May not be aware of their thoughts unless they write or talk about them. The activation of the parasympathetic nervous system means that introverts may have trouble getting motivated or moving, might appear lazy, may be slow to react under stress, may have a calm or reserved manner, may walk, talk, or eat slowly, may need to regulate protein intake and body temperature, must have breaks to restore energy. Extrovert brain-body circuits. The extroverted brain has less internal activity than the introverted brain. It scans the external world to gather stimulation to fuel the shorter, quicker dopamine pathway. The signals from the brain travel to the full throttle, or sympathetic nervous system, that controls certain body functions and influences how outies behave. The fact that extroverts' brains are constantly seeking new input means that outies are likely to crave outside stimulation, dislike being alone too long, increase eye contact when speaking to take in others' reactions, decrease eye contact when listening to notice what's happening in the environment, enjoy talking and be skilled at it, feel energized by attention or the limelight. The dominance of the short dopamine pathway means that extroverts shoot from the lip and talk more than listen, have a good short-term memory that allows quick thinking, do well on timed tests or under pressure, feel invigorated by discussion, novelty, experiences, make social chit-chat easily and fluidly. The activation of the sympathetic nervous system means that extroverts are likely to act quickly under stress, enjoy moving their bodies and exercising, have high energy levels, not need to eat as often, be uncomfortable if they have nothing to do, slow down or burn out in midlife. Food for thought. Here are a few more morsels relating to introversion and extroversion from the world of scientific research. Extroverts have more trouble with the law, divorce more, change jobs more, gain and lose more friends, and have more conflicts in general than introverts. Introverts do better on tasks that require careful attention, like air traffic controllers. Extroverts would get bored watching the screen. Oh, another 747. Extroverts do better in grade school and on exams, but introverts do better in college and graduate school. In a study on pain, extroverts complained more about pain but seemed to have a higher tolerance than introverts. In a test of memory tasks, the introverts performed better than the extroverts, regardless of whether they received positive, negative, or no feedback. The extroverts' performance was improved by receiving positive feedback. Introverts tend to have more sleep problems. A study of 258 college students found that extroverts had higher self-esteem than introverts. Innie and outie middle school children discuss topics differently. Outies tend to contradict and give counterexamples, while innies worked collaboratively to develop creative solutions. Extroverts adapt more quickly to time zone changes than introverts. Extroverts prefer nonsense humor, and introverts prefer humor that resolves something that is incongruent. Play to your strengths. It is important for introverts to know their brain dominance to understand themselves better. I think left-brained introverts may be more comfortable living life as an introvert. They may have fewer social needs, so they may not be as conflicted over spending time alone. Often they are more verbal and logical than right-brained introverts, so they are able to succeed better at school, work, and in meetings. Many engineers, accountants, and computer jocks fit this profile. Since these individuals may be less emotional and focused on the smaller picture, they may feel okay about themselves or not even notice they are different. Right-brained introverts have numerous talents, but many of them are difficult to translate into traditional job skills. They are creative and may seem eccentric or curious to others. The term starving artists was coined for these folks. Notice how many actors are on my list of well-known introverts in Chapter 2. Most are probably right-brained. Since right-brained introverts feel more emotions and see the big picture, they may feel quite sensitive about their differentness. Educational systems are set up for left-brained learning, which requires logic, verbal ability, analytical questioning, fast responses for timed tests, and quick memorization. Children who are right-brained are often at a disadvantage and unappreciated. One of the reasons Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence, was so popular was because he